Richie Neal, I want to talk to you about the Russia investigation. It has always been my contention that if there is substance to what we are going to be hearing from both the committees of Congress and from the special counsel, that he has to fire Mueller before Mueller gets to him. That he has to fire Mueller. And so this whole thing with Jeff Sessions is going on. As we speak, he's meeting in the White House with him. What do you expect to happen here?
Well, I don't know, but I do know this based on my experience during the use of special prosecutors, beginning with Lawrence Walsh and George Bush Sr. and Ronald Reagan. And then when you move to Ken Starr during the Clinton years and a number of special prosecutors that were used on cabinet officials as well during that period of time, one of the things that you can conclude with great certainty is that they are not confined to the mission statement, that even though when you set out the discussion, it appears as though there is a definitive path to follow. If you remember in the Clinton impeachment, that Starr, the first prosecutor in that case, concluded that there was nothing in Whitewater to be discovered.
Right.
And when Starr was appointed, he went back and began to revisit Whitewater, Travelgate, and Filegate, and essentially came to the conclusion that nothing untoward had occurred. It's then that he, through the use of Linda Tripp, discovered Monica Lewinsky. And he began on the Lewinsky case, and it ended up with an impeachment inquiry that had started with a lie in a civil deposition. So the examination that took place during those years with Ken Starr and Bill Clinton concluded with the United States Senate, including Olympia Snow, by the way, and Susan Collins, who both voted no on conviction, even though the House had voted over the objections of many of us, four procedures they offered on indictment, two of which they passed. And it was all based upon that lie in a civil deposition. So wherever Mueller starts, there is no guarantee as to where he can conclude. For example, if he wants to take a look at the business dealings, he is not confined by the mission statement. He can do that. If he wants to take a look at tax forms for people that are involved, he can do that. If he wants to put the magnifying glass on what he believes to be perhaps illicit behavior, he's free to do that. There are really very few confines, and there are great questions that have been raised about the role of special prosecutors across the time that they've been utilized, and there are many of us who might have doubts about what a special prosecutor does in terms of consistency with the Constitution, but not to miss the point, they are not confined by time, and they are generally not confined by money, and they are certainly, as I indicated earlier, not confined to mission statement.
So there's a difference between a special counsel and a special prosecutor. The special prosecutor law is no more. Was that a mistake to do away with that?
No, I think that what had happened was you were finding that it was being used to settle political disputes. And I think that time and again, both sides came to the conclusion that the political disputes, if there were to be any, should be settled at the ballot box. And the understanding was that you would have an attorney general and you would have U.S. attorney offices across the country who were more than capable of taking on questions, again, of illicit behavior. And I think what happened was that the conclusion was drawn after Starr's quest to indict Clinton that, in fact, that it had been runaway and it had been the allegations were disproportionate to the proposed penalties.
So what happens? You get a special counsel, but he is fireable now. And that's I'm worried about.
Yeah, and I think in the case of Mueller, believe me, he served here in Massachusetts, as you know, with a distinction. For a long period of time, he has overseen the FBI. Nobody has questioned his integrity. And he is well-regarded across legal circles by conservative and liberal authorities. And I think that it would be a terrible miscalculation on the part of the president were he to decide to try to fire the special counsel. And incidentally, the humiliation that he has offered in the last couple of weeks to Jeff Sessions, even though I would disagree with much of Sessions' positions, an essential point here is that the Attorney General acted properly by recusing himself.
Okay, so let's go there. Let's assume that he does what I'm afraid he's going to do. He fires Sessions, he gets to Mueller, he fires Mueller. He goes to Rosenstein, he moves aside, they get another schlumpf who comes in and does dirty work. So the question is, Richie, everybody says, oh, he better not, because he'll really have trouble. What trouble?
Well, I think he ups the ante considerably then, and I think that Republicans in the House and the Senate will begin to walk away from him. And right now, I think that's the fracture line, that there's beginning to be an erosion of support for the president in the House and in the Senate, and even with some of his core supporters. And I think that if you recall, if you want to draw the parallel to what happened with President Nixon, that's precisely what happened. It wasn't until Republicans began to break away that the tide shifted.
General Kelly comes in now as chief of staff. This is a country that prides itself on having civilian control of the military. Is this dangerous?
Well, I don't think that it's dangerous in that sense. I think what's more dangerous is the chaos that has taken place inside of the White House now for the last 6 months, where you have a new communications director embracing the profane in an effort to oust the former chief of staff, and you have this infighting every day inside of the administration, which is more or less guaranteed a front page story every day in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal from those who are trying to position themselves favorably, not to be associated with, again, the chaos. So I think that perhaps in the case of General Kelly, he might be looking to discipline the messaging from the White House. I would suggest, based on what we've seen with this the Twitter account, good luck.
Let's talk a little bit about North Korea. The question for everybody is, what do we do?
Well, it's clear that the ICBMs that have been launched in recent days now have the ability to reach the mainland of the United States, and even though they're not as sophisticated as the North Koreans would like us to believe, there is a real danger here. So I think that now there's the reality of China being, for the moment, impotent as it relates to assisting us, but now they must see the consequence of what could happen and what this could trigger. And I also think that the stories over the weekend about South Korea now asking for more assistance, not only to develop more sophisticated weaponry, but also more of an investment in a defense shield, coupled with now what will surely be a request from the Japanese to begin to rearm. I think that trying to head this off, first of all, with isolation, but at the same time, soft and powerful diplomacy. The soft diplomacy of urging the Chinese to become more involved, and then I think the hard diplomacy of continuing to isolate the North Korean leaders.
Okay, so what if it turns out he is a madman, Kim, and he turns around and he drops one on Japan or a Japanese island, for example?
There's no question at that moment, I think it triggers an American response, but also a NATO response. And I think that, for the moment, is the reason that we should continue to keep communication with South Korea and China in an effort to isolate him.
It's always wonderful to talk to our friend Richie Neal, Massachusetts 1st District, a Democrat, ranking member on the Ways and Means Committee. Richie, thanks for being with us today, and we'll come back and we'll talk some more.
Thanks, Alan, very much.